His Night Begins, Season 5, Episode 8. Miguel Beltran Fuentes leaned back in his leather chair, a triumphant smile playing on his lips. The large screen before him displayed a live feed from the CCTV cameras installed throughout his drug compound in Indraprastha City, which he viewed from the comfort of his palatial, well-protected home in Goa. He had spent months meticulously setting up the operation, ensuring every corner of the operation ran smoothly under his watchful eye.
"Look, Papa, it's set up right under the noses of these pendejo authorities. The fools in khaki are raiding places left, right and center, only to find empty cardboard boxes."
On the other end of the video call, Don Ernesto Fuentes appeared on the screen, his stern face framed by a luxuriously appointed study. The old man's eyes scanned the various feeds, noting the bustling activity of the workers sorting and packaging the addictive chemicals.
"It is impressive, Miguel,"
Don Ernesto responded in a cold tone.
"You should be proud, Papa. I made this all possible thanks to your blessings and guidance,"
Miguel said, secretly hoping to elicit some form of approval from his father. Don Ernesto's face remained stoic.
"You have done well, Miguel. But do not forget, complacency is the enemy of success."
The reaction irked Miguel. He was about to respond angrily when an on-screen commotion caught his eye. Uniformed police officers began to swarm the compound, their presence causing immediate chaos among the workers. The live feed displayed the swift and brutal efficiency of the raid.
"Puta madre, pinches chotas!"
He fumbled with the controls, trying to switch between camera angles to get a better view of the unfolding disaster. Don Ernesto's face darkened, disappointment etched into his features.
"What is happening, Miguel?"
"I have it under control, Papa,"
Miguel stammered, panic evident in his voice. He watched helplessly as the officers arrested his men, shutting down the operation.
"Control? This is a disaster!"
Don Ernesto spat, his voice icy with disdain. Before Miguel could respond angrily, a loud explosion shook the walls of his sanctuary. The sound reverberated through the room, and the screen flickered.
"What the hell was that?"
Miguel shouted, rising from his chair. He glanced back at the screen, only to see Don Ernesto's expression turn from disappointment to contempt.
"Adios, Miguel. I will leave you to scurry, as always,"
Don Ernesto said, before abruptly ending the call. Miguel stood frozen. The crushing failure of his operations, the shock of the explosion, and the cutting disapproval of his father weighing on him like 1,000 bricks. Even the panicked urgings of his bodyguards who had rushed into the room were muted, drowned out by the temporary tinnitus that had overwhelmed his hearing. Outside, the trucks, fortified with reinforced steel and battering rams, relentlessly smashed into the outer gates. The gates, unable to withstand the onslaught, began to crumble under the relentless assault. A driverless petrol tanker, laden with fuel and explosives, was then sent crashing into a weak spot in the wall. The resulting explosion created a gaping opening, allowing for another front of attack. Inside the Benz vans, David D'Souza's men, along with their leader Anthony, steeled themselves for the impending battle. Anthony felt a surge of satisfaction as he watched his meticulously crafted plans, developed over weeks of reconnaissance and careful planning, come to fruition. Miguel's guards swiftly responded, gunfire erupting from various points within the compound. Anthony grinned as he surveyed the devastation before him. Time to show them what happens when they mess with the D'Souza family. Charge! He screamed into his phone. The breaches in the outer walls were now wide enough for the vans to drive through. Anthony's men wasted no time, speeding their vehicles into the heart of their enemy's stronghold, guns blazing. As his men emerged from the vehicles to confront their arch enemies, Anthony barked orders, his voice cutting through the chaos. He directed his men to cover each other and advance through the ornate gardens surrounding Miguel's villa. The night was illuminated by the muzzle flashes of automatic weapons as the two groups exchanged fire. Anthony's goons moved with military precision, taking down the guards with ruthless efficiency. However, many still fell to the hail of bullets from defensive positions that took full advantage of the complex's architectural features. As Miguel's men roared with joy at culling the first wave of attackers, they failed to notice how many of their own had succumbed to the assault. Their misplaced triumph was short-lived, however, as they watched another group of vans speed into the compound, bolstering the raiders' numbers. David and Anthony knew this would be their final chance to rid Goa of the cancer that was the cartel, and they had poured every last resource into this venture. Victory was imperative, and as their men advanced in coordinated waves, trying to overwhelm Miguel's defenders, it was clear that their unwavering belief in the mission was not completely misplaced. Anthony's rifle spat out rounds with deadly precision, each bullet finding its mark among Miguel's defenders.
Die, barbarians!
One of Miguel's guards screamed. He was crouched behind a marble statue, firing desperately at the advancing attackers. He managed to hit one of Anthony's men, but was quickly gunned down by the leader of the Goan resistance. The defensive perimeter was falling, and fast. Anthony's finger never left the trigger as he cleared the path through the courtyard. His men surged forward, their own weapons adding to the deadly symphony. Defenders crumpled where they stood, their bodies jerking violently with each hit. Blood sprayed across the pristine white walls of the villa and stained the once peaceful gardens. The air was thick with the acrid smell of gunpowder and the desperate screams of the wounded. As Anthony's rifle clicked empty, he discarded it without hesitation, reaching for the long sickle strapped to his back. The curved blade gleamed under the compound's floodlights as he swung it with savage intensity. He ducked beneath a wild punch from a guard and brought the sickle up in a vicious arc, the blade slicing cleanly through flesh and bone. Blood sprayed, and the guard fell with a gurgling cry. Anthony didn't stop to admire his handiwork. He was already moving to the next target, the sickle whistling through the air with deadly purpose. Each swing was precise, each cut delivered with lethal intent. His men followed suit, discarding their rifles as they ran dry and drawing a variety of bladed weapons. The air filled with the sounds of metal meeting flesh, grunts of exertion, and the screams of the wounded. One of Anthony's lieutenants, a burly man named Joseph, wielded a machete with ruthless efficiency. He hacked through a defender's arm before driving the blade into his chest. Another of Anthony's soldiers, a wiry man named Chaco, danced through the chaos with twin daggers, his movements fluid and deadly as he dispatched one enemy after another. Anthony's assault was relentless, and his men matched his ferocity. Together, they carved a path of destruction, their enemies falling before them like wheat to the scythe. The defenders, realizing the futility of their situation, began to fall back, retreating toward the villa to regroup. They hastily formed a defensive line, their backs against the ornate doors of the Grand Hall. With a renewed sense of desperation, they fired back at Antony's advancing force, their bullets whizzing past the intruders and chipping away at the ornate pillars, stone walls, and marble statues. The sudden burst of disciplined, concentrated fire momentarily slowed Antony's men, forcing them to take cover behind the charred remnants of the trucks and debris scattered across the courtyard. Scores of them fell where they stood. Antony, his eyes blazing with determination, shouted orders to his squad. Recognizing the defenders' attempt to mount a deadly counterattack, he signaled for his men to prepare their grenades. In a synchronized motion, a line of his soldiers pulled the pins and lobbed the explosives over their cover, sending them sailing through the air. The grenades landed amidst Miguel's men with devastating accuracy, detonating with thunderous blasts that shook the very foundations of the villa. Shrapnel tore through the defenders, screams of pain and fear echoing through the courtyard as bodies were flung aside like ragdolls. The defensive line wavered, and in that crucial moment, Antony's men seized the opportunity to press their advantage. They collected the automatic weapons dropped by Miguel's slain goons and unleashed a withering barrage of machine gun fire. The heavy rounds cut down the defenders who had survived the grenades. The relentless hail of bullets forced any remaining resistance to scatter or be annihilated. Antony's men surged forward, charging through the smoke and carnage, their battle cries resonating with grim determination. They breached the ornate doors of the villa, storming into the halls with blades and guns. Inside, the once grand interior became a new battleground as Antony's diminished forces pushed deeper, determined to root out every last one of Miguel's men and secure their victory. Under the cover of the chaos caused by Antony and his men, Guruji and Naz slipped into the compound, stealthily. The sounds of gunfire and explosions masked their approach, allowing them to navigate through the shadows undetected. Guruji wore his trademark white-striped business shirt and grey pants, topped with a long khaki overcoat, his uniform of choice throughout his career as an encounter specialist. This distinctive attire had witnessed countless confrontations and takedowns, becoming synonymous with his ruthless efficiency as he butchered criminals in the line of duty. It was especially fitting today as they prepared to slay his arch enemies, marking what he hoped would be the culmination of his bloody career. For this mission, Naz wore a form-fitting black tactical jumpsuit made of lightweight, breathable material that allowed for ease of movement and stealth. It featured hidden pockets, where she concealed her Japanese Tanto dagger and compact handgun. Her outfit was completed with a pair of sturdy black combat boots. Around her waist, she secured a sleek black leather belt equipped with various pouches for additional gear and ammunition. She wore fingerless gloves for better grip and tactile sensitivity. Strapped across her back in a specially designed sheath was a gleaming katana with a black lacquered scabbard and a traditional woven hilt. Guruji, his weathered face set with grim determination, glanced at Naz.
"It's time for us to split,"
he whispered, his voice barely audible above the din. Naz nodded, her expression momentarily shadowed by a cloud of sadness.
"There is no money in this for you anymore. No hope for your criminal records to be expunged." I will understand if you don't want to take part in further proceedings.
Guruji said.
Guruji, I thought you understood by now. This isn't about money or getting my record cleared. It's about legacy and revenge. This fight is personal.
Guruji smiled. Your skills, your courage, they surpass anything your teacher could have hoped to pass on to you. We are both soldiers for life, trained in the art of killing, destined to fall on the battlefield. If today is that day, I want you to know how proud I am of you. Naz's eyes glistened with emotion, but she maintained her composure.
We'll make sure Miguel pays for his crimes, she said.
They paused for a brief moment, the gravity of their mission weighing heavily upon them. Good luck, Guruji said.
I will find you,
Naz said. With a final lingering glance, they parted ways, each heading in opposite directions through the compound. Naz moved like a shadow through the compound. She rounded a corner and spotted a group of cartel goons rushing to reinforce the perimeter. With a swift, fluid motion, she unsheathed her sword, the blade keening as it left its scabbard. The first goon barely had time to register her presence before her sword severed his weapon arm at the elbow. He screamed in agony, but the sound was quickly silenced as Naz spun and drove the blade into his chest. She pulled it free with a practiced flick, sending a spray of blood onto the ground. Two more goons charged at her, guns raised. Naz slashed across the first attacker's midsection, spilling his entrails. She swept the legs out from under the second attacker and brought the blade down in a deadly arc, cleaving his skull. Alerted by the screams of the dying, more goons bearing bladed weapons appeared, and Naz met them with lethal efficiency. Their skills were outmatched by her masterful swordplay. One after another they fell, their bodies littering the ground in her wake. As she approached the main courtyard, a burly bearded goon blocked her path, wielding a machete with a menacing grin. He swung at her with brute strength, forcing Naz to duck and roll to the side to avoid the massive blade. She barely had time to recover before he charged again, hacking wildly. Naz parried a heavy blow, feeling the impact reverberate up her arm. She retaliated with a low sweeping cut to his thigh, but he managed to twist away, the blade grazing his leg. Roaring in anger, he lunged at her, and Naz narrowly avoided his attack by pivoting on her heel. The goon, undeterred by his injury, swung his machete in a wide arc, forcing Naz to backpedal rapidly. He pressed his advantage, striking with relentless power, each blow coming closer to breaking through her defenses. Naz deflected another heavy strike, but lost her footing, stumbling backward. The goon seized the moment, raising his machete for a fatal blow. With no time to think, Naz rolled to the side and slashed at his calf, causing him to howl in pain and drop to one knee. Seizing her chance, she lunged forward with all her might, driving her sword through his heart. The goon gasped, eyes wide with shock, before collapsing to the ground, finally defeated. Breathing heavily, but with unwavering focus, Naz pressed on. Miguel and Alberto were at the top of her kill list, and she was determined to find them. Guruji shared the same resolve, working tirelessly to track them down, ensuring they couldn't escape the compound. Their fate was sealed. Tonight, both men were destined to meet a grisly end, regardless of who found them first. Three more goons emerged from a side building, their eyes wild with fear and anger. They spread out, attempting to flank her. Naz took a deep breath, her grip tightening on her sword. She charged the nearest goon, deflecting his wild swings with ease. She spun around him, slicing through his hamstring, and as he collapsed, she delivered a final blow to his neck. The other two goons hesitated, seeing their comrade fall so quickly. Naz used their hesitation to her advantage, lunging forward with a series of rapid strikes. She parried a desperate attack from the first goon and countered with a brutal slash across his chest, his blood spraying onto the wall behind him. The last goon, seeing the futility of fighting her, turned to run, but Naz was on him in an instant. She swept his legs out from under him and delivered a precise thrust to his eyes just as he hit the floor. She paused to catch her breath, surveying the carnage around her. Suddenly, a familiar menacing voice cut through the chaos.
Impressionante. Muy impressionante.
She turned to see Alberto Salazar, standing in front of a roaring Balinese lion sculpture, his eyes as cold and calculating, and his demeanor as ferocious as the beast. He was dressed in black military pants and a green tank top, which showcased his powerful physique. He rolled his left shoulder, a grimace of pain flashing across his face, before quickly twisting into a menacing sneer.
"It's the end of the road for you, puta," he hissed.
Guruji moved through the shadows of the compound with the lethal grace that belied his age. He gripped his gun tightly, the weight of it familiar and comforting. The sounds of gunfire and explosions filled the air, masking his approach. The chaos caused by Antony's assault provided the perfect distraction. His destination was the garage at the back of the house, where their intel indicated Miguel would attempt his escape. The high walls and reinforced gates had thwarted any attempt at a rear entry. The only way to reach it was through the front entrance and then through the gardens on the left side of the house. He emerged from the cover of a large tree, spotting a group of cartel enforcers gathered near a makeshift barricade. They were focused on the perimeter, unaware of the silent predator approaching from behind. Guruji raised his gun, took a deep breath, and fired with deadly precision. The first goon dropped with a bullet to the back of his head, his body crumpling to the ground. The others spun around, eyes wide with shock, but Guruji was already moving. He fired twice more, each shot finding its mark. Two more goons fell, their weapons clattering uselessly to the ground. The remaining attackers opened fire, but Guruji was a blur of motion. He darted behind a wall as the bullets chipped away at the concrete all around him. After what seemed like ages, the firing stopped. He peered around the edge, assessing the situation. Three goons remained, and they were advancing cautiously, their guns trained on his position. As soon as they glanced his head, covering fire erupted in his direction. Guruji waited until they were close, then sprang from cover and rolled onto the floor before taking a knee. His first shot took out the lead goon, the bullet punching through his chest. The second goon swung his rifle around, but Guruji was faster. A mist of pink blood erupted from the back of the thug's head. The last goon fired in a panic, emptying his gun without hitting Guruji even once. Realizing his folly, he charged at Guruji with a knife in hand, desperation etched on his face. Guruji sidestepped a wild slash and delivered a punishing kick to the goon's knee, dropping him to the ground. Before the goon could recover, Guruji brought his foot down on his throat, ending the fight. Breathing heavily but focused, Guruji pressed on. He knew he had to reach the garage soon, before Miguel orchestrated a swift escape into the night. Time was running out, and every second counted. The gated entrance to the back section of the house, which featured the garage, was just ahead, but two goons stood in his way. Guruji fired, hitting one in the forehead. The goon staggered back and fell, while the other returned fire. Guruji dropped to one knee, squeezing off two quick shots. The first missed, but the second struck the surviving goon in the chest, sending him crashing to the ground. As Guruji approached him, the man pulled a handgun from his belt. Guruji kicked it out of his hand and grabbed him by the collar, pulling him close.
"Where is Miguel?"
he demanded. The goon spat blood, defiant.
"Go to hell!"
Guruji's fist connected with the goon's jaw.
Ah!
The goon's head lolled to the side. Guruji dropped him and turned his attention to the half-open metal gate. He was almost there. A sudden movement caught his eye. Another goon, hidden behind a pile of tires, raised a shotgun. Guruji dove to the side as the weapon roared, the blast tearing through the space he had just occupied. He rolled to his feet and fired twice, the shots striking the goon in the gut. The goon fell backward, the shotgun slipping from his grasp. Guruji stood and continued forward, his eyes scanning for any additional threats as he passed through the gate. He had just crossed a series of garden beds to reach the garage entrance faster when an unarmed hulking brute in a red vest and torn jeans stepped into view, blocking his path. The scarred thug cracked his knuckles as a cruel smile spread across his face. Guruji holstered his gun. "You're dead, old man," the muscled giant growled. Guruji's response was a swift punch to the goon's solar plexus. The brute grunted, but barely flinched. He swung a meaty fist at Guruji, who ducked under the blow and delivered a rapid series of punches to the goon's ribs. The animal staggered back, but recovered quickly, charging at Guruji like a bull. Guruji sidestepped and tripped the goon, sending him crashing into mulch. The brute roared in anger, turning to face Guruji with murder in his eyes. He swung again, and this time Guruji caught his arm, twisting it painfully and delivering a sharp elbow to the goon's face. Blood spurted from the man's nose, but he shrugged off the pain, using his free hand to grab Guruji by the throat. Guruji struggled for breath as the thug's grip tightened. Desperate, he brought his knee up into the attacker's groin. The brute's grip loosened, and Guruji seized the opportunity, delivering a powerful punch to the throat. The beast gasped and fell to his knees, clutching his neck. Guruji didn't waste any time. He grabbed his monstrously muscled opponent by the hair with one hand and pulled out his gun with the other. Then he slammed his gun into his mouth, shattering the Hulk's teeth. The bullet opened a hole in the back of the giant's head. He dropped the body and wiped the barrel of his gun on his pants. Guruji scanned his surroundings and spotted the rolling automatic shutters of the garage. His eyes blazed with a fierce, unyielding hatred as he stalked towards it.